Hi, this is Ross Pitko, and you're listening to the Payers and Players podcast.
Welcome to episode 95 of the Payers and Players podcast. My name's Robert. I'm here with Scott. We've got a great guest for today. Before we start, we switched our podcast hosting over to Spotify. It's still available everywhere you get your podcast, but if you would, we've tweeted out the link to Spotify. If you would just go follow us on Spotify, it makes it a lot easier. Also, if you follow us on Twitter and if you feel so inclined to subscribe, we'd appreciate that. We really appreciate all of our subscribers. So with that, I'm going to throw it over to Scott. Scott, take it away.
All right. Ad or no ad?
No ad, because that's what we're playing.
Oh, nice. So full third set or a 10-point match tiebreak?
My preference is to play a full third set, but once that match has been decided, I don't mind a 10-point tiebreaker for sure.
Let's get on the road. East Coast, West Coast?
Interesting question for me. I spent my whole life on the East Coast and have just recently come out to the West Coast. I'm not ready to say West Coast is the best coast yet, but I can see why people love it. So let's put it that way.
Okay. Serve and volley or baseline and grind?
I was certainly baseline and grind. If I get somebody who can serve and volley now, I love it. It's great to coach, fun to watch. But yeah, definitely sort of baseline and grind.
Okay. Going to the U.S. Open or going to Wimbledon?
So never been to Wimbledon. It's definitely on my list, but I'm obsessed with the U.S. Open. I think that they've made that place so fan friendly. Try to get there every year for a few days and just absolutely love being able to be on the outside courts and just watching, the highest levels, right, you know, from the front row. It's a really amazing fan experience there now.
For sure. Hard courts or clay courts?
I grew up in Worcester, Massachusetts, playing on red clay courts, which seems crazy, but yeah, I'm going to go with clay courts over hard courts.
All right. I like it. I like red clay too. And last one, vacation. You going to the beaches or you going to the mountains?
I'm going to the beaches. My parents live on Martha's Vineyard, and I'm hoping to spend a lot of the summer out there with them, spending a lot of time on the beach.
Awesome. Well, great. So the person you've been listening to is Ross Petko. He's the head coach at UC Santa Cruz for both the men's and women's teams. Ross played collegiately at Boston College with one of our former guests, Mark Lucero. And like Mark, he also went to law school, but unlike Mark, he finished law school.
Yeah, I remind him of that all the time.
And he probably makes fun of you for making the wrong decision, right?
Yeah, I think he's probably having a little more fun than I am, it seems probably. Like. But no, he made a great career for himself. We're all really proud of him. I turned on the Australian Open the other day. I didn't know that he had been working with Anisimova, and like there he is in the box right at the Australian Open. So he's incredible, and what he knows about tennis is just tremendous.
Yeah, he was one of our favorite podcast guests. He was on episode, I believe, 89. No, not. So, somewhere in the 80s, but really good podcast. If you haven't listened to that one, go check it out. And we hope to have Mark back, you know, because like we do want to talk about his working with Anisimova. I think that's a really good partnership and hoping that they do some good things. So, with that background, Ross, give us a little bit more of your tennis background and how you got into tennis and how you got to where you are right now.
Yeah, for sure. So, like I said, I grew up in Worcester, Massachusetts, was in an area where basically no one played tennis, and people in my family were sort of like, what, you're playing what? Like, I grew up with a family of baseball players and basketball players. And so I started playing tennis by basically hitting a ball against a garage that we had in the driveway of the house that I grew up in. And so my dad got me out to some, you know, local clinics, started playing at this public tennis club in Worcester that had these red clay courts. And just absolutely fell in love with it. Used to spend my entire summers there just playing all day long. That kind of took me down the road of being, you know, a nationally ranked junior player and traveling around the country to play as a kid. That took me to Boston College, played 4 years at Boston College. Absolutely loved college tennis. Graduated, sort of thought maybe I was done with tennis. Spent some time in New York City, paralegaling, doing things like that. Came back to Boston, went to law school, had an opportunity to coach at Boston College. with Scott Wilkins, who has been there for like 20 years and has done really some amazing things with a sort of underfunded program there. And was able to help them through the transition from the Big East to the ACC, which was just an amazing experience. Graduated from law school, became a lawyer, which was great. Practiced law, have been practicing law for the last 15 years. But after practicing law for about 10 years, came over to a technology company that was across the street from the MIT tennis courts. And so one day at lunch, I just kind of wandered over to the MIT tennis courts, and they were out there playing a tournament or practicing or something. And the coaches kind of noticed me, and they were sort of like, hey, who, you know, like, what's your connection? Like, no one really comes out here and watches. And so basically one thing led to another. Did a year there as a volunteer assistant, while practicing law full time. And an opportunity there to work with Dave Hagmus, who's total legend, probably won, I think he's won 30 championships in a row, both at Duke and then at MIT. Opportunity to work for him full time as the assistant tennis coach came up. And I kind of said to him, I was like, look, Dave, I can't do this. I'm working as a lawyer. Like, I have a job. And he was like, listen, you've been great. Like, I want you to do this and we'll just work around you. And so I did like 6 seasons as the full-time assistant, and just every year picked up more and more responsibilities, started doing individuals, working with the schedule, running tournaments, just fell in love with it and fell in love with coaching. And then kind of, you know, really a long shot, just sent out an application for the head coaching job for the men's team at UC Santa Cruz. And within 48 hours, they kind of responded to me. And even there, I was sort of like, okay, well, I have this other job. They're going to rule me out, you know, within 5 minutes. But I'll take it as professional development. And so I took the interview, and it was a Zoom call. And I kind of remember going like halfway through it, just sort of being like, oh, the little heads in the boxes are like really seeming to respond to my answers. So I'm like, I might be like a viable candidate for them to hire me as a full-time head coach for this school. And so I immediately kind of had to go back with the folks that I work with. I work for this company called Akamai in Boston as a technology contracts lawyer. And I kind of had to say to them, hey, you know, I know you guys have been supportive of this MIT thing, but I need you to know that I may have this opportunity to be a head coach. And, you know, they were kind of like, well, whatever you want to do, like, we fully support it. Like, work-life balance is super important to us. We know you've been doing this at MIT and you love it. And so we'll do anything to make it happen. So I was like, okay. And I kind of went back to UC Santa Cruz and I kind of said the same thing. I was like, look, I've got this career going. I can't necessarily just drop everything to do this. And so, you know, I want to make sure that you guys understand that this is what's going to go on. And so they kind of said the same thing. They were like, you're our guy. Like, we want you to come out here. We think you'll have the student athletes, you know, in mind when you're doing it. And so I just felt like it was the world telling me, you got to up and move to Santa Cruz from Boston and you got to go try to be a head coach. So I'm in my first year at UC Santa Cruz. On my second day on campus, the interim women's coach actually left the program. And the interim athletic director basically said to me, do you think you could be the women's coach too? So since September, I have been serving as the head coach for the men's tennis team and the interim coach for the women's tennis team, in addition to negotiating complex commercial contracts in sort of off hours, and just absolutely loving my life and just being really, really appreciative of all of the opportunities that tennis and particularly college tennis has really opened up to me. So yeah, you ask a lawyer an open-ended question and you get a pretty long-winded response. So sorry if that was too much information, but that's the background on me.
Yeah,
that's
that
how
was
I got
great.
Here.
I mean, just so you know, I'm the only non-lawyer on the call. both you and Scott are attorneys. So that's a great story. I had no idea that was your background, but what a cool, first off, what a cool response from both employers, right? But to be able to do what you're doing, it just sounds so exciting. And I bet Scott's sitting there going, man, maybe I need to follow that playbook.
I wouldn't recommend 2/3 full-time jobs for everybody, but I'll tell you that it's really fulfilling for me. And I absolutely love it. And, you know, I'm sort of a nerdy lawyer who loves to negotiate contracts, but I also, this opportunity to work with student athletes and bring a little bit of my professional experience into what is a really formative time in their lives in terms of where they're headed, what they're looking for out of their education, what they're looking to do with their careers. It's just really a nice opportunity for me to blend both worlds, and I absolutely love it.
That's amazing. And so talk a little bit about how do you balance all those balls in the air? So tell us a little bit about, you know, how you segregate your day between your lawyering versus your coaching.
Yeah, for sure. So the one thing I'll say is that when I was in college, being a student athlete definitely taught me really good time management skills. And I've continued to leverage those throughout my entire professional life. And I think that as I work with student athletes, that's one of the things that I'm always trying to kind of help them with and make sure that they understand how important it is. So I definitely do that. I mean, my days are crazy. I work for an East Coast company. We're very East Coast centric. So I have a lot of meetings at 5 a.m., you know, 5:30 in the morning. So that's about the time I'm getting up every day. Whether it's to be on a meeting or it's to try to get stuff out the door. I tend to spend the first sort of 4 or 5 hours of my day lawyering and making sure stuff is getting done, stuff is getting out the door, meetings are happening. And then by about 10 a.m., I generally, which is sort of funny because we're so East Coast centric at Akamai, and California time is about, people don't start working out here until about 10:30 anyway. So by about that time, people at Santa Cruz are ready for meetings and ready for stuff to happen. So then I kind of spend the rest of my, you know, sort of 9 to 5 hours working, doing some tennis stuff. And then I come back at night and sort of manage both the kind of administrative stuff that needs to be done for the teams at UC Santa Cruz. And then obviously, you know, responding to emails, getting, you know, sort of work product out the door that needs to be answered and anything like that. So, I have a full day for sure. But what I love about it is that it's not the same day every single day. Everything is different. And it's all things I love doing. I mean, I never have a day where I'm just like, oh my God, I have to go to work today. I mean, I have every day where I'm like, I love going to work and I love what I do and I love all of the people that I interact with.
That's like you said, the East Coast, West Coast thing actually has played to your advantage.
Yeah, it certainly helps. I mean, you know, you're not looking to work 40-hour weeks if you're going to take this on. I'm definitely working a lot more than that. But I would say that the timing of it does kind of work nicely. I mean, we're so East Coast centric and everything seems to be very morning centered in terms of meetings at Akamai. And then at UC Santa Cruz, we're kind of afternoon heavy, right? So the timing of it all just sort of works nicely.
Yeah. Scott, you may be on mute.
Yeah. Okay, great. So tell us a little bit about, because like I say, you know, one of the things that we have not done enough on this podcast is talk D3 tennis. And so give us a little bit of a primer on D3 tennis and how it's different than, say, D1 or D2.
Yeah, for sure. So it's interesting that you guys are just kind of diving into the D3 world. I was sort of looking it up earlier, and there's 328 schools are sponsoring Division III programs, and there's over 3,500 student athletes that are competing in men's and women's Division III tennis. So Division III is the largest division just by sort of population and number of teams. So I think for those reasons, you guys are going to continue to kind of see more and more student athletes head into the Division III world. The other thing I'll say, too, is that Title IX has been obviously tremendous for a lot of reasons, but it's hurt Division I men's tennis, and we've lost a lot of men's tennis programs in Division One. And so what I've seen is that there's been an expansion in Division Three with both opportunities and the level is sort of going up. So I like to tell people that Division Three is sort of the world where people just love the game, right? No one's really going to be a professional tennis player coming out of a Division Three school, though I think it has happened. But mostly you're going to a Division III school because you love the sport, but also you're looking for a student athlete experience, emphasis on the student first. And I think that's huge. I spent obviously my college years in Division I, and then coached in Division I, and then came over to MIT. And when I first got into Division III, I was kind of like, oh, this is different, right? And it felt a little relaxed, right? That was kind of the mindset that I had. And my initial reaction was sort of, well, you know, okay, but this is just a lower level of Division I. And as I really got into it, I found that I loved it, because what I found about it was that the tennis was still high. The level of tennis was still high. Everyone was very competitive. Everyone's still trying to win. But they also just value that student athlete experience. And so the kids are there to get a great education, become really good people, and drive towards great careers. And they have their mind on all of those things while they're in there for their 4 years. I'll tell you candidly, when I was in college, it felt like I was there to play tennis. And the other stuff was just sort of supporting my ability to play tennis. And it's like, well, I was never going to be a professional tennis player, right? I played, you know, sort of 5-6 singles on a team that was, you know, mid-range Division One. I was never going professional tennis. And had I been an 18-year-old that was sort of getting that full experience, you know, I think maybe my college experience was obviously great, but it could have been even more fulfilling, I think, had I had that mindset. And so I love working with these student athletes who are just there to get this well-rounded experience. I will say that, number one, the level in the 7-8 years that I've been involved in Division III has come up to a place where, you know, you're seeing the top guys with these COVID years have transferred out, and they'll go play 5 and 6 at a top 25 Division I team. And vice versa, we've had guys that have played at, you know, very, very highly ranked Division I teams come and play Division III tennis. So the level is really, really strong right now. And I just think that it's just the best of both worlds, you know, and you get that competitive experience. The season is a little bit shorter, right? We don't play this, you know, we have less dates. We play a shorter season in the fall. So you get a little bit more time to have that kind of college experience. But, you know, we're still doing lifts 3 times a week. We're doing individual workouts. You know, my team is traveling around the country playing every weekend. We're playing a lot of the top schools in the country in Division III. Like, it's still a very competitive tennis experience. And so, you know, for those reasons, I just love it. I think it's giving the kids exactly what college athletics was meant to be, and right, that's sure. Why.
Yeah. So do this for me real quick, and I know Scott's got a follow up. What, give us a range on your men's and women's teams, what the UTRs are, just so the listeners out there kind of get an idea of the level.
Yeah, for sure. So when we're doing recruiting right now for UC Santa Cruz, we're looking for 10 plus for the men and 7, 7, 5, 8 for the women. And okay, you know, that's, we are not a, you know, we're sort of outside of the top 40 right now. We are not a top 10 program. I mean, the top 10 teams, they can throw 11s, 12s at you all day for the men. And the sort of national champions are above 9 for women, and in the 12s for men. So it's a high level at this point. And deep too. I mean, you know, it's not like these teams have 1 or 2 11s. I mean, they can go all the way down in some instances. Yeah. So yeah. It's really solid.
Yeah, no, we're here in Kentucky, and a couple of weeks ago, the D3 had their national indoors in Lexington, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And got to see some of that, and you're right. You know, the level was really high, and you're absolutely right. You're talking 11 and 12s for all the teams across the board, and there wasn't, you know, a weak player out there. You know, you weren't like, oh, right. Well, they, you know, after the first two, you know, those Lions 5 and 6 aren't that good. But no, they were, you're right. The depth is there, the quality's there, and the education's there. So it really opened my eyes to how good the level was.
Yeah, that's what I wanted everybody. Well, I wanted everybody to have a chance to hear that, right? Because I think when people think, because you and I know that, Scott, we've seen even NAIA teams. I mean, you look at a team like Georgia Gwinnett. I mean, they're unbelievable, and they're NAIA, right? And so I think people don't realize how high the level is. And so I wanted you to have a chance to explain to people kind of the range of what you're looking for. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say one thing you missed about that, too, is that the level of coaching is really high, too. I mean, I'm competing against colleagues who have been doing this for 20, 30 years at the same institution, and they are professionals, right? Like, they know what they're doing. And, you know, I talked about Dave at MIT. I'm replacing Bob Hansen out here, who was a total legend. You know, these guys have been doing this forever, and they just are really, really students of the game who know how to coach players. And where the players, you know, player development is huge in winning in Division III, right? I mean, you can't just out recruit everyone in Division III. And so a lot of these kids can come to these schools and they can get better, like a lot better. You know what I mean? Working with some of these great coaches. So I think that's something for the student athletes to keep in mind too. You're not just a number in Division I. You are going to get a lot of individual attention where your coach is going to be really focused on trying to develop your ability.
Yeah, it makes sense, right? Your top 10 teams that are in Division I in men are going to go after 13 plus UTRs. So in Division III, let me get a 10 and see if I can make them an 11. Let me get an 11 and see if I can grow them to a 12, right? It makes total sense.
Yeah, that's right. I think there's a focus on development in Division III where the focus, and obviously they're doing that in Division I as well, but the focus really there is recruiting, right? I mean, that's how you're winning. You're out recruiting everybody. And in Division III, it's just really hard. We're getting a lot of the same level guys. So it's like, how good is your program and how much are you developing the talent that you're getting in the door?
Right. And, you know, one of the things when I did a little bit of a research study on looking at, you know, sort of where the top 100 players went, you know, maybe the top 60, 70 players, you know, tennis recruiting seniors, they signed D1. But after that, they start going to, you know, Middlebury's and Bowdoin's and some of the D3 schools. And then, like you say, you know, down, you keep going down, you know, 4 stars and 3 stars, that's where, you know, a lot of those players, they just maybe not have had the great coaching. They haven't had the opportunities, but now you give them an opportunity to work with a coach for 4 years. You're going to see those kids that are maybe 3 stars, maybe they're, you know, 10 UTRs end up 11s and 12s because, you know, this is their opportunity to really focus on, you know, have a coach that really is invested in them and, you know, have 3 or 4 years to work on a development plan and get them to the level that they can get to. So I think it's a really good, you know, option for those players that, you know, aren't, say, top 50, is just, like you say, the commitment that the coaches have to development is because that's how they're going to win. They're not going to, you know, it's not the players are pretty evenly, you know, tiered, and it's who can develop the players is going to have the better program.
Totally. So go ahead.
I was just going to say that when I'm talking to student athletes, you know, I'm not telling anybody not to take a full scholarship, right? If there's a D1 team and they want to allocate one of their 4.5 to you, I say absolutely take it. But this mindset that a lot of the kids have, which is like, I'm a D1 player. And it's like, yeah, you are. You're a D1 level player. That doesn't mean you have to go pay $1 zillion to ride the bench at some school. You know, at UC Santa Cruz, we can offer you an opportunity to play in our top 6, play some of the best schools in the country in Division III at in-state tuition for California students, which is, you know, a fraction of the price of what you're going to pay to go to some of these other private institutions. So I just think, you know, we are a great alternative for a really skilled tennis player who may not have those opportunities to receive one of these full scholarships.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So then that goes to recruiting, right? And it's funny, we've had a bunch of coaches on the podcast, and all of their philosophies around recruiting are different, and all of the support the university provides is very different, foreign or are American players? How much money do I, the whole thing, right? Do I have money to travel? So kind of what's your recruiting strategy?
Yeah, so my recruiting strategy is to first sell the university, right? I'm in Santa Cruz, California. It's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to. If you take a student athlete to our athletics facilities, they overlook the entire Monterey Bay. I mean, it's breathtaking is really what it is.
And so is the selling of that virtual or is it in person?
So we'll have to talk about that. It's both, right? So, I mean, in my marketing materials, I'm always sending out, you know, photos of the university. But if I get a student athlete on campus, I mean, you certainly bring them there. We tend to do a little bit more sort of with the California kids who come here. I mean, we're not unfortunately lucky enough to be flying kids from all over the country to come do, you know, recruited visits here. That's just not a reality of the D3 recruiting budget. So we do both, you know, we'll do it virtually and we'll do it in person. But, to me, it's all about selling the university and then selling kind of the program. So the university kind of sells itself. I mean, I'm the only Division III program in the UC system. Obviously the University of California, speaks for itself, but Santa Cruz, in addition, is a really unique sort of school in the UC system. One, we've got the Division III athletics. Two, we've got a real commitment here to sort of diversity. We were ranked first in the nation for racial and gender diversity in leadership in 2022. We were second in public universities in the nation for students focused on making an impact on the world. We have these great programs in both engineering and in computer science. So we've got, you know, these top five rankings in terms of, you know, high paying jobs that people are coming out of Santa Cruz and heading off into the Silicon Valley. So the academics kind of sells itself here. That's excellent. Our average GPA on an incoming student is a 4.0. We only had a 60% admissions rate this past year. So there's a lot to sell in terms of the academics here. In addition, I would say that the type of student who comes to UC Santa Cruz is a really interesting person, right? At MIT, I always used to say, the students come there to start a business and start a company, and they did, and it was amazing. And I've actually worked for two spinoffs of MIT research projects in a row. So that absolutely happens here. At UC Santa Cruz, what I like to say is they come here to change the world, right? They really are the type of kid who shows up and just wants to be a great member of the community, wants to be good to the environment, wants to, you know, treat people with dignity and the respect that they deserve. Those like core values that we see in everybody who comes here is just great in terms of what the environment is like on the campus and how the students interact with each other, how they interact with the faculty, how they interact with the coaches, with the administrators in the athletic department. So that sense of community and the sort of environment that we have at the college sells itself. Then we get into kind of what the athletics program can do for you and what tennis can do for you. And so for me, that's where I try to sell myself a little bit. I mean, I think Division III athletics across the board at great institutions kind of can all do the same thing, right? It gives you this fulfilling sort of experience where you're both an athlete and a student. I think where we can set ourselves apart is that I'm not sure that a lot of my colleagues who are coaches, you know, have 15 years of experience kind of in corporate America and can really help guide someone's career in addition to, you know, fix their forehand. I think that's something that's really unique about me, and it's really unique about the experience at UC Santa Cruz. So, you know, we try to sell the campus, we try to sell the school, and we try to sell the program. And, you know, it's a work in progress. Obviously, it's my first year here, so I'm getting some feedback on the kind of traction that we're getting. But the more I get the word out about the program, I think the more positive reaction that we're getting. And I don't know that you guys know this, but UC Santa Cruz has won 34 national championships in Division III in tennis. So we're no stranger to winning around here, and we're no stranger to getting the best recruits in the country. And so I think through a lot of the messaging that we're creating now, we're going to be right back there, and we're going to start getting those, you know, 11, 12s, 8s for women, And you will see us sort of rise up in the national rankings pretty quickly. That's our goal around here.
There's no doubt you got your sales pitch down. That was outstanding. You got wanting to come play for you, and I don't even play tennis.
Well, that's what we're trying to do here, right? I mean, we're trying to just build excitement around the program and excitement that you're going to come here, you're going to get this great education, you're going to get this great tennis experience, and you're going to head off into the world being a better person and being a great sort of, you know, a corporate steward for whatever you're looking to do, whether it's you want to be a doctor, a lawyer, you want to be a CEO, a CFO, whether you want to be a public defender, like anything, you know, that you want to do, we want to send you out into the world and make sure that you have the skills to be successful.
Yeah. And, you know, on our last podcast with Cooper Woostendyke, you know, he mentioned that when he was talking to coaches, he said it was really hard because you talk to the coach and then he'd hear the pitch and he'd be like, yes, I want to go play for that coach. I want to go to there. You know, Ross, it's the exact same thing. You know, it's like you did a good job of getting that intensity, getting that passion and fire through. And now it's like, yeah, this is a great, you know, anybody that's listening to this podcast should be very interested in UC Santa Cruz and wanting to become a banana slug.
I hope so.
So tell us a little bit about the facilities. I'm sorry, no. Let me back up. Daily practice. You know, how are you managing two teams and a second job, and how does the practice work? And I know y'all are probably in the middle of your season too. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. So just the way practices work around here, I'm very. I'm a stickler with the kids about intentionality, right? And making sure that if we are on the court or we are doing something to work on our tennis, that there's a reason why we're doing it, right? We are never out there just hitting balls, right? The first thing we do every day is we do a dynamic warm-up, right? That includes, you know, all kinds of stretching, injury prevention stuff, footwork drills, just everything that we can do to sort of be ready to start playing. Then we warm up, we do a one-ball warm-up. I don't let them warm up with a bunch of balls. They've got to chase up. If they miss because they didn't move their feet, contact point wasn't in the right spot, didn't finish their swing, whatever, they better be running to go chase down that ball because I want their intensity up, their focus on tennis, and I want reinforcing fundamentals. From there, we generally do some sort of feeding drill that's working off of, you know, some pattern that I'm seeing in what they're playing. We will tend to do a live ball drill that follows on whatever we were trying to build on in the feeding drill. We'll do some serves and returns, and we'll do 15, 20 minutes of conditioning at the end. So we're out there for about 2 hours a day. We'll alternate between, we'll have match days where we play sets, and we'll alternate with drill days. And then, we'll also alternate singles and doubles. Although I've been skewing a little heavily towards doubles recently because we in Division III are still playing the 9-point system. And I just feel like those 3 8-game pro sets that you start with set the whole tone for the match. So if you're not good at doubles, you're not winning anything in Division III. So we are tending to do a little bit more with doubles and that stuff. But that's generally what the practices look like. We'll go for about 2 hours a day. They also are lifting 3 days a week for 45 minutes. We also have them doing regular meetings with our trainers just to make sure they're kind of managing injuries. And then we do a lot of travel. So UC Santa Cruz is uniquely positioned sort of in our geography to where we don't really have a lot of Division III's local to us. So we are on a plane most weekends, if not, you know, every weekend, it's every other weekend. And so we'll go to LA, we'll go to Texas, we'll go to the Pacific Northwest. Like I'll take them anywhere to go play the best teams in the country. And so there's a bunch of travel, and then we're playing on the weekends. So that's kind of, to answer your question, that's a little bit of what the weeks look like. I mean, for me, you know, I'm available for individuals a few times a week. So we will try to build those in as well. You know, I'm working like a maniac, but I love it. So managing my own schedule, I just figure out what the teams need and then manage against that. I sort of back into what else has to get done, both from, you know, my professional life and my administrative responsibilities to UC Santa Cruz. I kind of back that into whatever the teams need and make sure that I have the time to do it, but make sure that the student athletes and their experience kind of comes first. I'm excited that you guys asked about the teams. I think we've already, just by putting in sort of a professional environment and really focusing our time and energy on improving, getting better. The women's team right now has its first national ranking in 10 years. And they're 6-1, 5-1, 6-1. We've only lost one match and won a bunch of 5-4s, which we're super excited about. We feel like we've really improved our fitness, improved our doubles. Men's program, been a little tougher. We've had some injuries. We've also played a little tougher schedule. We've played some of the top teams. But they have a winning record. We just beat conference rival Christopher Newport in LA this past weekend for the first time ever. We had never beaten them in conference. Super result for us. Really well coached team, really talented team. Played Mary Washington down there, another really, really talented team. Super coaching and had a really close, 5-3 with them. So we're just really excited about kind of where we're headed. We talk a lot about being not sort of objective goal oriented, but process goal oriented. So we're just trying to build the foundation of the program, kind of one piece at a time. And as we do that, the results are going to come. I don't think anyone is really, we didn't win against Mary Washington, so now we're not a good team. I think everybody feels like we're getting better day by day, and all of this stuff and all of the intentionality that we've built into our programs, we're starting to see the benefits of. And I think the vision that I have for these programs, I think the student athletes and the administration and the school in general, I think, are really buying into it. So it's just an exciting time to be at UC Santa Cruz.
Yeah, definitely. When you're on the court doing those drills, tell me about assistant coaches. How do you, organize? Because I think you have 10 or 12 players. So with getting all the drills done, how do you do that?
Yeah, so it's myself and an assistant who are out there on the court. What I like to do is, obviously with live ball drills, that's great because you can just sort of be walking around. But what I do is I have the men and the women self-feed a lot of times. And what that allows me to do, just like you're teaching, it allows me to be on the same side of the net with the player that I'm working with, right? So I'm not, a court and a half away from the person who I'm trying to help their forehand, right? Or to motivate them to move their feet better or to get better spacing on an inside out forehand or whatever, whatever I'm trying to work with them on, I find just physical proximity to be really important. So, I am generally, focused a lot on kind of my communication style, which is, eye contact, high energy, and proximity, and just making sure that, there's effective communication going on between me and the student athlete. And it's not perfect. It doesn't work all the time, but I'm seeing results already from just that, sort of intentional focus on how we're communicating. And I'm seeing these players improve, really quickly. And that's a great feeling as a coach. Like, it's why we do it, to have that sort of click moment where somebody gets a shot that they haven't been making or that they've been struggling with or a different way of thinking about how to construct a point. Like, you get those light bulb moments with your kids, and that's kind of what you live for as a coach, right? It's just like, that's why we're doing it, to make an impact on the individual. I think a lot of coaches, particularly young coaches, sort of run into this issue where they're sort of like, well, I'm the leader, so it's about me. And it's really not. It's really about the experience that the individual has. And then that is going to fuel the success that your team is going to have. That's at least been my experience and what I try to focus so much of my time on when we're out there at practice.
Yeah, and you hit on it a little bit, but you talk about your conference. It's kind of unique or unusual conference, the Coast to Coast Conference. Tell us a little bit about the teams in the conference, where they're located, and how you make that work logistically.
Yeah, so we're we're a little bit in an interesting conference, as you say. It's sort of modeled after like a Division I conference, like the Big Ten or something, right? Like, we have teams, it's called the Coast to Coast Conference. We have teams in California, and on the East Coast. And so the idea is to raise the visibility of the athletics programs by competing on a national level, and having high quality athletics programs, schools that are committed to athletics, funding athletics, competing against each other and holding conference championships that give student athletes the opportunity to, you know, compete in a conference championship and potentially compete in the NCAA championships. We at UC Santa Cruz, we for a long time were an independent, which is a tricky world to navigate. And so this has raised the national profile of athletics at UC Santa Cruz, and it's allowed us in a bunch of sports to have automatic qualifiers. Our primary competition in men's and women's tennis is Mary Washington and Christopher Newport, both in Virginia. They have kind of had a real stronghold on the conference for a long time. And so they're our targets. We're trying to get better. We're trying to beat them. We were thrilled on the men's team to be able to eke out a 5-4 win over Christopher Newport this past weekend. Mary Washington on the women's side, I think they've won the conference like 20 years in a row. So obviously that's a tremendous accomplishment from them. Super well coached and just talented teams there. We also play with Salisbury, who's in Maryland, and Pratt. And so they're pushing us, you know, they're coming up, both rising programs that are doing the same thing that we're doing, which is really funding the programs and really trying to focus on just running competitive D3 programs. I mean, I think there's sometimes from the D1 world, I think there's a sort of mindset where it's like, oh, D3, all they care about is academics. And it's so far from the truth. I mean, when I interviewed here, the interim athletic director, her first question to me was like, how are we going to win? You know, like, what's your plan to win? So I just think that these conferences and these teams in D3, they're focused on winning, and they're trying to kill us every time we play against them. And, you know, we've got to just really work as hard, if not harder than them, to try to gain ground, because right now those programs have historically been a little bit better than us over the last 5 or 10 years. And so we're just trying to make up ground on those teams. And, you know, it's exciting to be in this national conference. We'll travel to Mary Washington to play the conference tournament at the end of the season. So that's a really exciting trip for our student athletes. They seem to love it. And we're thrilled to be in the coast to coast. And it's just a great experience and opportunity for our student athletes.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So as we transition, I know we've got to wrap up here soon. So we'd like to transition now into the fast speed. It's really exciting what y'all got going there. So what we'll do in this fast speed is we'll ask, it looks about 6 or 7 questions, just really quick answers. So what's your favorite or the team's favorite restaurant on the road in Santa Cruz or in Santa Cruz?
So on the road, we do Chipotle all the time. We love Chipotle. I mean, they would like to eat fast food. I don't let them eat it. So that's about the closest thing we get to fast food. So that's where we tend to go. There's a sandwich shop in Santa Cruz on the main street here called Zocalis that makes the best sandwiches in town. I love it there. So those are our favorites.
Well, everybody says that.
We need to send Chipotle a bill for all the advertising we get, because everybody says Chipotle. Must be a tennis thing. Let's see, something you've changed your mind about as a coach since being at UC Santa Cruz.
Oh boy. I go back and forth about the schedule all the time. When I was at MIT, I wanted to push us to play the top. I would have played a top 10 team every match and when I was doing it. And I've gone back and forth a little bit on this. I think that there's some sort of blend that is the right mix for every team. I think you've got to get exposure to playing the best teams in the country. I don't think you need a schedule where you play, you know, 15 of the top 20 teams in a row. You've got to make sure you're managing your players' confidence by making sure they're getting some wins. And so I've gone back and forth about that. I think next year for us, we will be focused on playing a really well-balanced schedule that also gives us the opportunities to play some of the best teams in the country. But that's definitely one I've gone back and forth over since getting here. And since being a head coach, it's really easy as an assistant to be like, well, I don't care if we lose every match. It feels a little different when you're the head coach, where you're like, yeah, I think there's some folks in my administration who might be concerned with what our record looks like.
Yeah, that makes sense. Even if they don't realize you're playing top tier, because a lot of them don't even know. You know, right. Just why are you 0-7? Well, right. Yeah, maybe next year I'll schedule a little different. So what is something you believe to be true that everyone else thinks is crazy?
That's a hard one for me because I feel like people think I'm nuts all the time. I mean, I think that in this day and age, you can get anything out of your career that you want to. It's available to you out there. And I think that I'm not sure everyone understands that. I think people a lot of times sit and wait for opportunities and say to me, oh, well, I didn't get an opportunity to do this. I didn't get an opportunity to do that. And my response to them is like, if you want to go do that, just make that opportunity happen for yourself. And there are ways to get out there and do it. And I feel like through my own sort of career, I've been able to kind of prove that. You know, I think if 10 years ago, if somebody had said, hey, I want to be a lawyer full time and also coach college tennis as a head coach, they would have been like, you know, no, that's not going to happen. But I just kind of kept pursuing it in different ways. And it came to fruition. So I would say, yeah, just push yourself to get out of your career what you want.
That's really good. Totally. And like I say, you definitely are embodying that. And, you know, being an East Coast lawyer and a West Coast tennis coach is the definition of probably something that everyone else thinks is crazy, but you believe it's true. And so I think that's awesome. Your favorite tennis book or documentary?
I don't know. My favorite tennis book. I tend to read all of like the coaching books. And so I haven't spent a ton of time focusing on tennis coaching books. I'm reading all of Coach K's books right now. I'm in the middle of that one. The guys make fun of me when I'm on the plane because I pull it out. I don't really like to fly, so I try to distract myself every time we get on the plane by reading Coach K's books. And I just find that like the similarities in coaching from one sport to another are all there, right? And there's just so much you can learn from. I mean, anytime anybody runs a dynasty, I just want to know how they did it, right? Like, how did they do it? And I want to figure that out. And so I spend a lot of time watching women's basketball, watching Gina Auriemma. It's like, how are you doing that? You know, it's like, how did you win 11 national championships, like out of nowhere in Connecticut? And Duke was sort of the same thing in basketball too. It's like, no one had ever heard of Duke before the 90s in terms of basketball. So those are the books that I like to read, more focused on coaching and less about tennis. I also don't mind some of the Netflix documentaries about like the real lives of the players on the tour. I think that that's really interesting. I think American tennis right now has some real sort of characters in terms of their personalities, and there's a bit of star power there. So I'll watch those as well, but not more so for entertainment than anything. When I'm really trying to focus learning stuff for the programs, I tend to gravitate towards these like super successful coaches.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I coached for 10 years and not tennis, but more than anything, just going through the experience of doing it every year, year in and year out was where the learning was. And then getting around really good coaches who had already learned all those lessons and watching them operate. There was nothing. There's a coach that I work with. His name's Bob Monroe. I think if he were on an NFL football coaching staff, he would have been the best coach on that staff. Like, he was so good. Yeah. And to your point, learning from the best, it's a definitely a way to go. So if you and Mark Lucero played a match, who would win?
I think I probably lost to him when we were in college, but I could beat him. Come on, get out of here.
Make sure he's listening to that.
Oh, yeah, sure. For sure. He's a head case.
just get into his head and let him implode.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. And last one, best thing about being a banana slug?
So for me, it's just this being a part of the community, right? Like, I just love the mission statement, the morals, the values of the school, right? Like, everyone who comes here is just looking to make an impact on the world by being a really good person. And I love that. And I didn't really even totally understand that or comprehend that when I was coming out here. And then I got out here and I just met all of these people, and I met the kids on the team and I met the students, and it was like, oh my goodness, it's almost overwhelming. Like how much these people care about, you know, things like being a good member of the community or people who are less fortunate than themselves. And it's like, that's inspiring. And it's inspired me to, you know, keep that as a huge corner, like keystone of the program. I think we talk about it all the time. And I just think it's just a great part of the university and a part of the athletics program.
Nice. Well, we really enjoyed having you on. It's great to hear what's going on, and I hope the listeners out there really enjoyed it. If they want to get a hold of you, what's the best way?
The easiest way is to email me. I'm constantly on email and constantly on my phone. I don't sleep that much, and if I am sleeping, I'm thinking about emailing you. So email's the best. It's rpytko@ucsc.edu.
All right.
Well, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for being on. We hope.
Thank you guys for having me. This was a blast.
Yeah. Good luck, guys. Rest of the season, and I know that this is a program that's that will soon be continuing for national championships. So good luck to you guys.
We hope so. Thanks.
Up my appetite, don't leave me high and dry. Oh, and I don't wanna jinx it, baby, and treat myself at the spine. Don't wanna overthink it, baby, just treat. My ass.